This series of Let's Make It Rain is sponsored by PensionBee, a leading online pension provider. They're on a mission to make pensions simple so that customers all over the UK can become pension confident and save for a happy retirement. PensionBee's website and app make it simple for customers to combine their old pension pots, contribute flexibly, and withdraw their pension money all in one place. PensionBee offers a range of pension plans for different savings needs, from a flexible self-employed plan to socially responsible plans like their Impact Plan or Sharia Compliant Plan. Head to pensionbee.com or download the app to get started and become pension confident. Remember, when investing, your capital is at risk. And speaking of investing, you've probably heard me say before that we are our own biggest asset by far, and that includes investing in the next generation. I wrote Cash is Queen exclusively for preteen and teenage girls to equip them with everything they need to take control of their financial futures early. It's been translated into 5 languages and is available worldwide. So grab a copy for you and a friend today. Hi, and welcome to the Let's Make It Rain podcast. I'm your host, Davinia Tomlinson. This podcast is for the rainmakers. Those women who are breaking down walls, building their own empires, defying convention and rejecting stereotypes. Women who are unafraid to have open, honest conversations about money among friends and to share the truths we've been told to keep secret. Don't forget to subscribe, share and download wherever you usually get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, then please leave us a 5-star review. Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Let's Make It Rain podcast. Today, I'm pleased to be joined by my friend, the fabulous Faluke Akinlose. Faluke is founder of The Precious Network, a digital platform, network and resource for women of colour, the first UK publication of its kind when it was launched in 1999. That was the year I started university. Oh my gosh, Faluke, thank you so much for being here today. Can you introduce yourself more fully for the benefit of the listeners?
Sure. So yes, my name is Faluke Akinlose. I'm the founder of Precious, which is a network for women of colour in business and in corporate life. And our aim is to help make women of colour and black women visible.
I love that. Simple and straight to the point. And I mean, we first knew each other, didn't we, when I was nominated for a Precious Award. And I remember being so thrilled to have been nominated. It was the startup of the year. And it was in, I want to say, 2019. That was quite a big year for me. There were a number of pivotal moments in my life that year. And I just remember being so overwhelmed and so overjoyed to have been recognized by Precious, because I'd seen other people, you know, peers of mine in my professional network and personal network, who had done work with Precious, who'd been recognized by Precious. And it really felt, you know, I'd won other awards in the past, but I always, you know, winning a Precious Award felt particularly highly coveted. What is it, do you think, what is your secret sauce, if you like, you know, the thing that makes Precious so special and so significant to Black British women in, you know, a variety of different spheres, you know, the different professions, the creative industries, because there is something about being affiliated with Precious that I think really makes us all feel especially proud. And you should feel proud of that, because I think that's absolutely true. What is your secret sauce?
That's a big question. I don't think I have one. I think because Precious is really what I wanted to see when I was growing up. So, I mean, I started Precious because I used to love magazines like Just 17 and Jackie, and I think there's one called My Guy at that time. And I was just obsessed with them, but I never saw any women or girls in them who looked at anything like me. No black girls, no brown girls. It was like we were invisible. So I decided when I was about 12, maybe a little bit younger, that I was going to set up a magazine of my own. I didn't have a name, but all I knew is it would talk about, you know, black girls, black women in, you know, the workplace, women doing their own businesses. We talk about black hair and just, you know, success stories, just things we hadn't seen, I hadn't seen in my short life at that time. So I think I am Precious in a way, because what I'm doing, trying to do through Precious, is making our stories visible and important, relevant and seen. And that all comes from my need and necessity to do that. I think that's why it's still important today.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about why do you think it's still so relevant today? Because I can imagine there are lots of people, and I received similar challenge, if not criticism, in the early days of setting up Raincheck from people that some people dressed it up better than others. So there were some people that tried to put a positive spin on it and say, you know, Dav, you're so talented. You've got this expertise. There are lots of people that could really benefit from the work that you do. Why are you restricting yourself and your service uniquely for and to women? And I suppose a similar thing could be said of Precious. You know, I'm sure that you in the past have experienced people saying to you, why are you trying to segregate women of color? It's divisive. Now, of course, I stood my ground. You stood your ground too. But what kind of response did you give to those people in terms of why it needed to be something that was specifically for women of color? And I guess, you know, without seeking to project, you know, what kind of response did you receive? Were there any detractors or was everybody broadly supportive?
Oh, no, I used to get hate mail in the early days from random people.
Oh, my gosh. People just take the time to do that.
Yeah, just saying. I know. No, it was just bizarre. Just negative and rude, racist hate mail. I also remember going to meet my business advisor in the very early days. I remember he was a bank manager, an ex-bank manager. His name was Bernard. And he said to me in our very first meeting, oh, Faluki, why do you need to feel the need to create this space just for women like you, just for women of colour? I don't understand it. This is not a business. And that was basically our first and last
wow.
meeting. Yeah, that was
I love that, Faluki. Oh my gosh, you're a woman of steel.
I hope so. I was taken aback, but not really. But I was surprised he said it so openly, really, at the very first meeting. But I think it made me sort of dig my heels in more than anything.
I think it's very telling, isn't it, the ways in which other people project some of their own thoughts and feelings. And because he clearly wasn't the target audience, not least because he's not a woman and presumably he wasn't a person of colour, but the idea that he was so confident and felt so emboldened in saying, why do you need to do this, is wild to me when he's not at all the target audience.
Exactly. And I still get a little bit of that. I mean, not so recently, maybe before the murder of George Floyd, I think people were still bold enough to say, you know, they didn't understand it, that, you know, why do you need it? What are you doing it for? Yeah, it's just interesting because it's not for you and that's okay, you know.
Exactly. Not everything is for you.
Yeah. But some people find that hard to get to grips with. So and that's their issue. And it just makes me feel more, it's a word, emboldened, I suppose, and more determined to continue on this mission. I feel it's a mission that I have to tell our stories in a positive and uplifting way. I think the thing that really upsets me a lot of the time is when we hear about women of colour, or black women in particular, in the media, it's normally, or usually, I should say, like a trauma story,
yes.
Like we're in pain, something horrible's happened to us. And the media, particularly British media, have a really hard time talking about our success stories and the work that we're doing, the business we're creating, you know, the strides we're making in corporate life. They find that hard to do. So I feel it's my job, through Precious, to do that.
I love that. And I can completely relate to what you share. I mean, myself and my close friends, we talk about that all the time, the idea that we are so worn down and beleaguered by the constant assault on our senses by the UK media in particular, but it's actually global media that only wants to amplify those stories that depict us in distress or in pain or in trauma or in victimhood. And that, you know, when you think about the impact on our psychological well-being, it's so profound. You know, I often say, and particularly now having relocated out of the UK, I often say many, if not all, Black British people are walking around in a permanent state of, it's not even post-traumatic stress disorder or PTSD. It's ongoing, like we're living in traumatic stress disorder constantly because our cortisol levels are constantly heightened. They must be in order to deal with the many different ways in which we might be, you know, the microaggressions that we potentially experience in the workplace, the news reports that come out that we'll be talking about, you know, even when it's things like maternal mortality rates, or from my perspective, looking at the gender pensions gap and recognizing that whilst, you know, for women overall, there is a pensions gap, but for Black women, it's even worse. Or when you look at the racial wealth gap, which looks at how much of every pound that circulates in the UK economy is owned or held by families of colour. And of course, as you might expect, for certain demographics, we're often at the lower end of the wealth spectrum as well. So there are so many different ways that we are reminded of how we are not doing as well as we would like to do financially, and we are unsafe in the healthcare system in certain scenarios, particularly at points at which we are most vulnerable, like during childbirth. So, you know, your contribution to actually saying, yes, those things also exist, but what about some of the other aspects of our reality? What about the joy of the Black existence and the Black experience? And how can we talk more about those sorts of things so that we can really be represented in our fullest and most multifaceted selves, really?
Absolutely. I think it's more important for me now that I have nieces who are, I mean, now they're young women, 21, 18 and 8. But it's more important for them to see women who look like them doing well. And it's just a matter of course. It's not a big deal. It just needs to be an everyday story, our stories.
Yes.
And it's more important. That's why Precious is more important as I get older, that they see those stories and can embrace them. Yeah, that's really, really important.
So thinking about the Precious community then, and its importance, particularly to women of colour, how have you managed to cultivate such a loyal band of supporters who are not just followers, but arguably fans now, or even they're beyond just being people that exist as part of the community? But, you know, I would often say that the women that make up the Precious community are active. They are speaking at events, they are helping to coordinate events, they are producing content, they are championing Precious in their workplaces. You know, they're just doing so much to make sure that Precious not just remains relevant, but is seen, and the incredible work that you do is recognized. How do you think that has come about? Is it something that has been cultivated quite organically, or are you very intentional about developing that sense of community?
Oh, I was very intentional about building a community for Precious women, absolutely intentional. But I think it has grown organically. I think for me, community is a safe space, the freedom to be your, you know, to be your full self and to be acknowledged and to be seen as, you know, the person you are fully. And I think Precious does that in a way that's grown, you know, really organically. And I think this is why the awards have become so special for so many people, because for a long time there were lots of awards out there for women, you know, for women in business, but women of colour or Black women were not being recognised at all. I used to go to these events and see just no women of colour on the platform. I just couldn't understand it. So obviously these women are out there doing the work, they're building businesses, they're doing great things in corporate life, but they're not being recognised. So I think when they come to the awards, whether they win an award or not, I think it's quite emotional because they are being seen. You know, we are preciously saying that, you know, we see you, we see the work that you're doing, and we're proud of you. And I think that's what community is all about.
I love that. And I completely agree with the idea that, you know, feeling included, feeling a sense of belonging is so important. And I think it's something that we assume that when we become adults, we don't need anymore. And that it's for children. You know, children want to be part of something. Children want to be invited. Children want to be celebrated and recognized. But actually, that's a feeling that never leaves us. It's just part of human nature that we all want to feel that we are part of a group or a community with whom we share a common understanding. You can share the highs, but you can also share the lows. And I think Precious is so important to us. Exactly as you say, it is emotional for those reasons. But where did the courage for it come from? Because actually, and we're going to come on to where you sit on a continuum of introversion to extroversion in a minute. But the thing that I've always admired about you, Feluke, is that you have this kind of quiet confidence and inner steel that has meant that you've been able to sustain this business really for 25 years. You know, that's a really big deal. Where did that courage come from? You know, tell us about teenage Feluke or how you cultivate your own confidence. For anyone listening, that, you know, who I'm sure you have a number of admirers and people that watch you do what you do so quietly and in a really unassuming way, but yet so powerfully and impactfully. Where did that courage come from and that self-belief?
So I think a lot of my courage comes from my family, particularly my mum and dad, particularly my dad, because he always taught me and my brother and sister that, you know, being Black was a really precious thing. We were lucky to be, you know, Black children growing up. And he sort of encouraged us to enjoy life. And I think that's instilled that quiet confidence in all of us that helps me do the work that I do.
Yeah, I love that. And I particularly love you sharing with us all those very powerful words from your dad, you know, around you being lucky to be Black, because I think the Black British experience for those of us that were raised by immigrant parents, myself included, the stories that anybody will hear about our experiences, typically about our parents and other elders in the family saying, you know, you've got to work twice as hard to get half as far. So all of that, you know, we prioritize education, we push ourselves really far. But I've never heard it articulated through that lens, from the perspective of you should feel lucky to be Black. That puts a completely different spin on it for a child in terms of how you view yourself and your identity and the way you show up. So that if people don't treat you as though you were special, you're looking at them as though there's something wrong with them, not there's something wrong with you. So I love that. That grounding from childhood into adulthood is really quite powerful.
It is. It's been so impactful throughout my life, honestly. And it's something that I know my sister has passed down to her children, and they have that quite confidence in them as well. It all comes from my dad and his words. Absolutely.
So Feluke, then thinking about, you know, I touched on it, this idea of introversion to extroversion. And it's very interesting because, of course, we all have to work with people that are on different stages, I suppose, or different levels. And there are some of us that are ambiverts, as they say, you know, that you can oscillate between the two different extremes. But I'm sure most of us embody lots of these characteristics. Where would you plot yourself on a continuum of introversion to extroversion?
I would say that I'm an introvert who can be extrovert on occasion. Some of my friends would laugh at me saying I'm an introvert, but I think that's where I am. I think this is fed into my visibility as a leader, because I tend to lead from the back, sort of pushing people forward. And that's the space that I feel most comfortable in. That's the place that I get, I suppose, a lot of joy from, is seeing people win. So I'm a quiet leader. Somebody once called me a quiet storm, which I quite liked. So I just go around doing, you know,
like
big things in the
well.
Background. Yeah. I don't think do things in the background, but I don't feel the need to sort of say I'm doing it. I sort of just get on with it, really. That's the way that I work.
I love that description of you. Quiet storm. It's exactly what those were the words that I was grasping for, but it's just beautifully put, isn't it? Quiet storm, or like a kind of silent or smiling assassin. You're just making things happen behind the scenes, not necessarily needing to be glorified for it, but you are, you know, gently steering and navigating and effecting change, but doing so from a position of quiet grace, which I really love. So yeah, kudos to the person that told you that. So I suppose thinking about being a business owner, because lots of the Rainmakers that are listening in are entrepreneurs as well, whether they run their own businesses for a living or they have side hustles to supplement their income. What would you say have been your biggest, I suppose, wins and some of the challenges you faced in running a business with such longevity? As we say, it's 25 years of Precious this year, which is incredible.
Thank you.
What have been some of the highs and lows from a business perspective?
I think some of our biggest financial wins have been working with partners, big corporate partners that have brought in the big bucks, if you like, doing impactful work. Those have been our biggest financial wins. Not just the sponsorship for the awards, but doing things like research into women of colour, you know, motivations for setting up businesses. That's been the most powerful financial wins that we've had. I think the challenges for us have been really articulating who it is and what we do. People sometimes wonder, you know, what are you, a magazine? Are you an events, you know, company? What are you? And I think that's been our biggest challenge, is sort of articulating our, not our mission, but just, you know, saying who we are in a sort of articulate way, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And actually, that kind of segues nicely into my next question, which was going to be, how would you describe yourself if you had to say, or just explain to anybody that is unfamiliar with Precious? Because even though I know and love it, I can't assume that everybody else does. How could they hope to engage with the work that Precious does, consume the content, be part of it, support? What are some of the different avenues for both for, you know, individuals like myself, as well as corporates as well, if anybody's listening and thinking, oh, actually, I'd love to support the work or sponsor the work that Precious does. What are some of the different ways that people can get involved, really? What are the outputs of Precious, if you like?
Sure. So we have a magazine that's been going, obviously, that's how we all started, the magazine, Precious Online. So we also have contributions to that magazine from women who are setting up or starting a business. You want to share their stories. We hold events every month at the British Library. In terms of sponsorship, obviously, there's the awards that we do. We have the Precious Awards in November. It celebrates brilliant women in business leadership. and corporate life. And also we have conferences. We've just done a wealth conference in April, which is absolutely brilliant. Would welcome any sponsors that would be interested in working with us. And we also have an upcoming wellbeing conference in September, talking about what's it like to be a woman of colour in the UK today, and what are the stresses that we face, and how can we build, not resilience, but the tools to help us just live with grace and joy.
I love that. And again, it all goes back to what you said originally about not everyday Black trauma, but instead amplifying the ways that we are joyful in our everyday existence too. Which, because if you think about anybody that is friends with Black women, anybody at all, men and women of different ethnicities, backgrounds, you know, ages, I'm sure the one common thread that would run through all of their different experiences with different people across the UK and indeed the world, I'm sure they would always say, we love to laugh.
Yes.
We are so joyful.
Yes.
We are funny. So I'm sure even they, people outside the Black community that have got Black friends, must be looking at the depictions of Black women on TV and elsewhere in the media and be like, my friends are nothing like this. Yeah. Like, what the hell?
Exactly.
Where other races, particularly if you live in a country in which there is a white majority. So the UK, let's take the UK. I suppose there is an implicit benefit as a white woman to seeing yourself depicted as you actually are, because I suppose, you know, the content creators, the media creators traditionally will have come from your background. So therefore they're able to express your reality in quite realistic ways, in quite, you know, relevant, realistic and authentic ways. But because I suppose in the past, Black people, and to this day, I suppose in many respects, we haven't had the same access or the same seats at the table. And on that basis, there isn't anybody to champion or be our voice. And so what is represented can sometimes be really janky. We're looking at it like, well, we wouldn't say that, or we don't sound like that, or...
Yes.
We're not always angry either. Like, what is that?
Exactly.
So some of these stereotypes that really take root. And so anything that gives us the opportunity to come together and be who we actually are, which is vibrant and joyful and also sorrowful when we need to be sorrowful, but certainly not this monolithic, you know, constantly downtrodden group of people.
I think we have to have the space to be all that we are, to be happy and joyful, absolutely. But also we want to cry and rant if we want to.
Yes.
I don't think we should make any apologies for that. And I think Precious provides a safe space for us to be able to do that. And also what I've seen quite interesting is when people come to Precious events who are not women of colour or Black women, they are, I think, surprised by how joyful the conversations are. And even when we're talking about, even when we're talking about trauma, we can still laugh. Because there's always hope and there's always optimism in what we do, which I think is really important as well.
I love that. There is always hope. There is always optimism. We are eternally optimistic. And I think we have had to be.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But it's very interesting and quite telling what you say about women that don't come from that demographic, from our demographic, if you like, as Black British women, coming to some of the events and being surprised. And actually, that's quite, not only is it revealing, but I suppose it's quite encouraging as well. So we need more of that.
Absolutely.
We need more people to be surprised, because it is surprise and shock that I suppose is what jolts people into doing something or saying something or being like, no, actually, that impression that you have of our colleague is completely wrong, because I've been to this conference and I've experienced this or I've experienced that. And again, whilst it doesn't mean, I mean, the impression might equally be totally right. It doesn't mean all Black women are totally joy-filled, but give
us
the space to be all of the things.
That's it.
Right? So, yeah. Feluke, let's talk about your relationship with money then, because, of course, this is a podcast about women and money and some of the many money wins as well as money mishaps that we have experienced through our journeys to date. How would you describe your relationship with money, first of all?
My relationship with money is kind of up and down. I think my influences were, again, my parents. My mum was very much the budget maker, so she knew down to, you know, the last penny what we had available to spend on, you know, necessities or other fun stuff that we could do. My dad was a total opposite to her. For him, money was there to be spent on joyous things, really. So he enjoyed having people round, and, you know, every day was celebration for my dad. Monday, it was, you know, let's celebrate, let's get some nice food, blah, blah, blah. That was his outtake on money. And I think I've taken a little bit from both of them. But I would say, actually, more from my dad. I see money as a way to be able to get the life that I want, but also able to, you know, support other people and give them, like, you know, lovely experiences. And I don't really think about, often I haven't really thought about after the money's gone, you know, what's the backup plan? It's like spending it in the moment has been some of my, I would say, one of, you know, I've been quite careless in that way. But at the time, it's been amazing and joyous to do. I haven't really thought about the backup plans. So I've learned from both of my parents about money and how I look at it, how I treat it.
And I think, you know, given the vast majority of us, what we learn about money, our relationships with money as adults are primarily informed within the home, you know, for better or worse. The experiences that we've had are shaped by that primary socialization, by our parents or the people around us. And I think, you know, as you described, you know, being able to take bits from both your mom and dad, which I think is also important. I often talk about the psychology of money, and it's so complex and multi-layered. There are so many different contributory factors. But there is a brilliant principle known as the money scripts, which talk about the different categories that lots of us occupy when it comes to how we manage our money, how we spend our money. And as you were talking, I was thinking to myself, you know, you talk about your mom being really careful with money, an extreme budgeter. And, you know, it kind of falls into the category of a kind of money vigilance story where you are very vigilant about money, quite fearful that you're going to run out of money, regardless of how much you have, but just being very careful around it. It's associated with Quakerism. And for anybody that's familiar with that religion, that would make sense. And then in contrast, then you've got, you know, your dad, who is effectively treating money as a source of, if not happiness, but, you know, recognizing it's a tool that can help to facilitate some joyous experiences, as you outlined. And I think there is space for us to adopt characteristics and traits from lots of different types of money scripts, if that makes sense, as long as they're not harmful. But making sure that we have a plan, being clear on a plan, I think is really, really key. So are you able to share with us then, you know, we're thinking about maybe your university days or maybe moving out of home for the first time. This is generally the sticky point where lots of us make our first money mistakes. Can you share with us a money win and then a money mistake and what you learned from them?
Oh, the one I remember the most and I cringe about is the money mistake is when I got my student loan from a first year student loan. And I spent like, I'd say 70% of it on these clothes that I wanted and then didn't have any money for my rent.
Wow.
It was just bizarre. Yeah, I don't know why I did that. And then I had to get a credit card to help me manage my rent payments.
Mm-hmm.
We sent me, at that time, banks were giving away, you know, money to their students, you know, left, right and centre. See, I was spoiled for choice, really. And it just sent me on a very tricky, slippery journey into debt that stayed with me for quite a few years after I left university. So yeah, blame warehouse for...
I'm sure there are many people listening in that can relate to that particular story. And this is the thing, it's when you are most vulnerable, the point at which you are leaving home for the first time, that's really where, you know, unless we have formalized financial education in schools, people are leaving home at 18 in many cases, going off to university, suddenly being responsible for bills for the first time. And if you come from a household in which you never had anything to do with bills or how households were run, suddenly you've got thousands of pounds from your student loan. You don't really understand the principles of debt management or the fact you understand, kind of broadly speaking in an abstract way, yeah, I'm going to have to pay this back in due course. But you're like, I'm so excited. This is the most money I've ever had in my life. And it's the reason why, yes, you know, financial literacy for children for me is so important and why I wrote Cash is Queen, because I really feel like what you describe is not uncommon for Luke. That's the point. So we shouldn't really have any situation where an 18-year-old knows nothing about money management until they leave home for the first time. And actually, for those people that don't go to university or who stay at home for university, maybe don't have a student loan, then they're waiting until they're 21 or 22, maybe, or even older before they start to embark on their own personal relationship with money. So it's so vital that we think about ways to invest in the financial literacy of the next generation. So thank you for highlighting why we need to do it. But you must have a money win for Luke. So tell me about a money win as well.
A money win is probably when I started investing in my financial education, okay, actually. And it's because it's been the last sort of 4 years, four or 5 years. It started with Rain Check, to be honest.
Wow. Thank you.
Yeah, seriously, it did. And it sort of opened my eyes to money and how I could use it for my future. If I start, you know, if I really thought about what I was doing, what I was spending my money on, and just being careful with money or being thoughtful about money didn't mean I could go without, if that makes sense. And also the other thing is not seeing, I think using the terms as well, like just saying to openly, yes, I want to be wealthy. Yes, I want to make money, and not being ashamed of saying that is really powerful.
It is.
And that's all part of the journey that I've been on with money. So that's been a big win for me, the confidence I have to talk about money now. And that confidence led to the Rain Check. My Rain Check journey led to me to start, you know, beginning the wealth conferences. I did the wealth conference for me, really, because I really want to know more about money. Mm. I want other people to know about money as well and wealth and how it can come in all different forms, through your pension, through property. Yeah, that's the biggest win, I would say, because it's going to last for forever to the end of my life.
Oh, that's brilliant. So powerful. So then just continuing on that thread then, when we think about financial freedom, of course, it means different things to different people. For some of us, it means being debt free. For others, it's never having to work another day in their lives. What does it mean to you? And what would you say is the most powerful money move you've made on your financial journey so far?
I would say financial freedom to me is being debt free. And I'm on that journey now to being debt free. And financial freedom is having time. It's the biggest thing to me. And I think also investing in other people to help you carve out that time has been a big, you know, financial win for me. So investing in my business, you know, getting support for my business, paying someone else to do things that I don't actually need to do, has given me time to go and do other things that can, you know, generate more revenue for myself, for my business. That's been a game changer for me, I would say, as well.
Yeah, we've returned to that theme a number of times over this series, the ways in which we, as women, need to grant ourselves permission, not just to ask for help, but to feel comfortable paying for help if we need to and if we have the means to, and we recognise there is a privilege associated with that. But where we are in a position to afford to be able to pay for help, or indeed just ask people who are willing to help us free of cost, we need to do that because it frees up that time that we can devote to something else. That might mean that we're able to stay in our zone of excellence. Someone else is able to do the things that they love to do. So everybody wins, but you get that help that just means you can generate income elsewhere and just enrich yourself further, whether it's through your education, whether it's through financial gains, whatever it is. But I think it's a brilliant win, and you're quite right. It's something that is long-lasting and sustainable. So I love that. So then my final question before we move into our quickfire round. So, you know, as we always say at Rain Check, when we talk about investing, we are, each of us, our biggest investment, our biggest asset by far. What would you say has been your biggest investment in yourself, and how has it transformed you?
My biggest investment is probably getting a therapist.
Oh.
Yeah, I've always thought therapy is something that rich people do.
Yeah.
It wasn't really for us. So, you know, ridiculous to think about it as something that I could do. And it wasn't because something was particularly happening or wrong or whatever. It's just, I just needed someone to talk things through with in a non-judgmental way. And it's been a game changer to be really open about, you know, what's happening with me and what I want to do in the future. And just to talk to somebody who's not going to judge you and give you some, you know, some light guidance, it's been really, transformational. So I'm normally quite I'm the sort of person who doesn't really feel that I don't need help or support from anybody. I can just do it myself. And often you cannot. So, yeah, I felt quite, brave, I suppose, in going on that journey with a therapist. It's been really transformational. And I'm kind of, in a way, enjoying it. Yeah, that's been the biggest thing for me in the last sort of year or so, is getting a therapist.
I'm so glad you shared that, and especially right at the end of the conversation, because often it's the last thing you hear is the thing that you retain. But I think lots of us, and this is one of the things that I would urge any other Black women, especially listening into this, who might have held similar beliefs as you and I, Faluke, in thinking, well, the idea of therapy isn't for people like me. it's not for Black women, it's for white women, or it's for, you know, we don't have the luxury of being able to take the time to sit down and go through our thoughts and feelings with another person. We have to keep those things private. We can't discuss family issues outside the home. There are a number of cultural norms that, you know, there's so much about our culture that is brilliant and vibrant and self-sustaining, but there are other things that can potentially trap us. And this is one of those things, this idea that we shouldn't speak up, we shouldn't ask for help, we should just suffer in silence, because that's testament to our resilience. And I think there are lots of us that needlessly are, if not suffering, but basically struggling, I would say. I think it's fair to say there are lots of us that needlessly struggle because we're afraid to ask for help, including when it comes to our mental health. So I'm glad that you've highlighted that. And whether you're a woman of color or not, if you were somebody that was socialized with that kind of ideal and value system, then now is a good opportunity for you to kind of take a step back and just reflect on whether it could benefit you in the same way as Faluke has described. So thank you for sharing that. So
of course.
Then our three quick fire questions. So please give me the first thing that springs to mind. So number one, money is no object. What are you blowing the budget on?
I would probably buy a corporate box at Old Trafford and do all my entertaining there.
Oh, I love that. Brilliant. I haven't had that one before. Okay, number two. What's your F-off fund for? So for anybody listening, your F-off fund is basically a nice way of saying it is a freedom fund. Let's say that. So your freedom fund, if you had a freedom fund and you could escape any kind of situation, what kinds of situations could you conjure in your mind that you would want to use it for?
Oh, I would probably love to F off to Portugal and build a house there and live there for.
Nice. Okay. And number three, complete this sentence. A rainmaker is someone who is or does what?
Ooh, that's a good one. Someone who can make it rain for themselves and the people they love around them.
I love that, Faluke. You know what I think? It's like the entire theme running throughout this episode is lifting as we climb. And you are the truest embodiment of that. So thank you for sharing your insights today and your experiences. If anybody wants to follow up with you, connect with you, or find out more about working with Precious, where can they do that?
They can find me on Instagram. I'm Faluke Akinlosi on Instagram, or they can email me actually, faluke@preciousonline.co.uk.
Brilliant. Faluke, thank you so much for your time today. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you. Absolute pleasure.
Hi everyone, Davinia here. I hope you've enjoyed today's episode. If any of what you heard resonated and you'd like to find out more about how Raincheck is helping women all over the world build sustainable long-term wealth, then visit our website at raincheck.com and join the mailing list for more commentary, tips, and opinion on how you can start taking steps to leveling up your financial well-being today. You can follow us on social media at Raincheck, and don't forget to share, like, rate, review, and subscribe. See you next time.